up, ATL and beyond? It's time for another version of Falcon Cast.
Bring a little bit more energy than that, my man.
Oh, sorry. What's up, man? It's Super Bowl edition. Oh, well, the Super Bowl's over. You know why I have no energy, Jay? Because we don't have any football for like six more months. Kind of disappointed. True. But it's Jay Adams. It's DJ Shockley. It's John Michaels. Your normal Falcon Cast crew. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Search Falcon Cast, all one word. Hit the subscribe button, and you can get each week's episode on the go. Thanks to everybody that does watch. And Jay gave me a gift today that a listener had sent in. Finally, I appreciate it. The Miami Herald from when Mark Richt was hired.
Yes. Yeah,
so better late than never, but that's okay.
Sitting on my desk since Christmas.
He was so excited to get it to you. I mean, he was.
And I feel bad because I kept forgetting to bring it down to you, but I got you.
You know what's crazy, Shock? And I know a lot of us keep sports memorabilia. I have, like, boxes of old newspapers that I like to keep. Because, you know, you like to remember where you were when some of that stuff happened. A lot of stuff to get into today. We'll talk some about the Falcons, the moves that were made throughout the week, players being cut, new director of pro personnel being brought in. We'll obviously talk a lot about the Super Bowl, and that's where I want to start. Denver Broncos, which, by the way, if you were watching this program last week, and you should have been, I picked the Broncos. You picked the Broncos. You picked the Broncos. You picked the Broncos. And guess what? Death to Dab. We never have to see the Dab ever again. We put one nail in the coffin back when the Falcons were able to beat them earlier this year, and Denver slammed it shut, put dirt on top of it, ran a bulldozer over it, put a housing project above it, and realized the Dab is now dead.
Thank goodness. You talk about the age of social media where just everything is completely, everything gets oversaturated, and then the Dab was certainly one of them. You know, that game, I know for there were two schools of Falcons fans here, those who would never root for a division rival and those who probably are SEC fans who do root for division rivals. And
which I know how much you love, Jay, and me as well.
It's a fun topic for me to talk about. So, you know, the fans who were completely anti NFC South were thrilled by that game. I don't know that Carolina had faced a defense like that all year, and I think during the weeks leading up to that game, there was very little talk about Denver's defense. And I feel like from here on, that's all you're going to hear about.
I think just to the fact
how Denver's defense
got his. He's got his credit for being the number one ranked defense. And that's kind of what everybody talked about. And that was probably the majority of it. But Denver was so much more than just the numbers. And when you watch the Super Bowl, you can tell their front seven, probably as good as in the National Football League. And then on the back end, they had guys who could cover when they went man coverage, or they went cover zero, and they tried to bring the house. And you could tell it was evident from the Broncos game plan. They wanted to keep Cam right here in this bottle. They wanted to keep him right in the little bubble and control him right there. And then on the back end, it was Jericho Cotri. It was Ted Ginn. It was Shirley Brown. You guys beat us. And at the end of the day, they said, if those guys beat us, then you deserve to win. Number one will not beat us with all the things that he can do. So I think they had a particular game plan that worked really well versus Carolina.
Well, I mean, let's give credit where it's due here. This is going to be the credit DJ Shockley show, I think. Mm-hmm. But this guy to my left here put together a great three-point video of how you beat the Panthers, how the Falcons beat the Panthers. And, boy, did you hit the nail on the head with that one.
It was, you know, when I thought about the way the Falcons did it, then I thought about what would be the best way for any team to beat it. And I look back at the game and I said, this is exactly what they need to do to beat Carolina, and kind of like their kryptonite to say of how to beat the Carolina Panthers. And obviously it was obviously the rush of the guys from the outside. And we've seen every single game Carolina and Cam hurt you when he gets outside the pocket, or he finds little alleys to run through and make more plays with his legs or his arm. And one of the keys was just, hey, you got to make sure you rush upfield. But when you rush upfield, you got to squeeze him. You got to keep him tight. You got to make sure he doesn't have that lane to step up in and then be able to create outside and also get pushed from the inside. Secondly, we talked about running the football. We talked about being able to consistently be able to run the football when you needed to in certain spots. We knew a time due would be tough. They got Carolina has a very good defensive front. We know that. But you still have to stick with it. They did that. And I think C.J. Anderson still had 90 yards. I don't think people even realize he had 90 yards throughout the game.
You'd never know it because it was all short runs.
Right. And that's what you needed to keep their defense honest. And then the last key I had was just don't allow Carolina the explosive plays. Yeah. Carolina wants those big explosive plays that gets them going. And when you don't have that, they have to methodically make their way down the field. And with how good we talked about Denver's defense is, that's really hard to do possession in and possession out.
You know, one of the guys I want to credit works on the Falcons Radio Network with me. Arch has always talked about how you beat Carolina. You have to stress their offense. You have to make their offense make a play. Because one thing they've done great in this run starting last year where they rattled off all of these wins in the regular season and were able to roll through the NFC playoffs this year, they constantly played in front, and they constantly made you have to play catch-up with them and allowed them to play their style of ball. A little misdirection, let Cam run it some, give it to Jonathan Stewart, and as soon as you suck up, hit a big play down to one of the receivers that they had. I thought it was huge that Denver, although not scoring a touchdown on the opening drive, went down and put points on the board.
Yeah.
And immediately on the first drive, Carolina goes three and out because Olsen runs the route about a half yard short. Aqib Talib comes up with an unbelievable tack. Typically, Greg Olsen's going to catch that. He's going to lean 6'5" forward. He's going to get a first down, and Carolina maybe starts to get some momentum. Talib tackles him. Ron Rivera does right. They punt it. Then you get the missed call, and you can argue one way or the other whether it was a catch or not. I thought it probably, in fairness, should have been a catch. They didn't. They said there was no indisputable evidence to get it overturned. And then Von Miller comes off the edge, and he makes the strip sack, fumbled, recovered for a touchdown. Suddenly, Carolina's down 10. And for the first time really all year, and I know they had been down 10 in three other games, but for the first time all year, they've got pressure on them.
Yeah.
And it's in the biggest stage. And you saw it with Cam throwing the football high. Receivers dropping passes, offensive line getting completely demolished, and they couldn't run the ball. And I think Denver did a great job stressing their offense, to steal a phrase from Arch.
John, I think you bring up a great point as far as how Carolina gets up on you. I remember when I look back on everything that happened before the game, I heard Peyton Manning talk at least four or five times about how you look up and it's 7-0, it's 14-0, it's 21-0. And I think mentally, before they came into that game, they didn't want to do anything to give them that momentum, to give them that head start. And I think that was the key part of the ball game was we got to make sure we start fast. We got to make sure they don't start fast and don't allow you to get up on you, you know, by 10 or 14. And like you mentioned, before you turn around, they're down 10-0 in the Super Bowl, in the biggest stage, going three and out, things that they're not used to doing. So right now, their offense is stressed already. Only being down 10-0 in the first quarter, they're still like, this is not where we usually are right now. And it forces them to do some things that they usually don't do, like drop balls or not going past the yard marker, little things that really hamper their offense.
Jay, I thought there was a huge point on Denver's first offensive drive that's probably overlooked. Carolina's number one defense that they love to use is the double A gap. They want to go double A gap. It's Luke Kuechly and it's Thomas Davis, and you've got to block all of these guys coming right at your quarterback. And on a third down, might even have been second down on the first drive, they smash Luke Kuechly down inside, and they got their tight end, Owen Daniels, on a little post route, and he hit him on the numbers, and he picked up 10 or 15 yards.
Roman Harper, yeah.
Yep, and from that point on, they got a sack on a double-A gap later on that Kuechly came free. But outside of that, that blitz was not effective like it normally
is. Well, you saw what they wanted to do. They wanted to go after and get after Peyton Manning throughout that game. I think they started the first two plays were blitzes. So I know watching the game, that was their game plan as well.
Well, that's the thing is you look at a guy like Peyton Manning and you talk about, yeah, he's getting up there in age and that's probably his last game and all this. Can he still do the things that he used to be able to do? One of those ways that you answer that question for yourself is you get after him and you make him have to get out of the pocket. You make him have to make early decisions, things like that. He didn't throw the ball all that well in the game. And I think probably one of the biggest credits, and we could sit here and do a whole show on Denver's defense and that performance. One of the biggest credits to that defense, I think, is the fact that the Broncos offense at one point had gone three and out five times, and the Broncos still had firm control of the lead. And that goes to show you how much that defense did to earn that win. And we hear defense wins championships in a lot of cases, and this is absolutely one of those cases because your defense was out there scoring points, keeping the other team. I mean, when Cam Newton's facing an 80-yard field, you can usually bet on, you know, a couple of plays he's going to make his way down there. On Sunday, it might as well have been a mile.
Yeah.
And so he had such a hard time against that defense that it almost didn't matter what the Panthers' defense was doing to the Buccaneers, Broncos offense, that, you know, you were still able to stay in control of that game despite having some of those offensive issues.
I'll ask both of you, and I'm going to put you on the spot because we didn't talk about this before. Denver's defense, are they a top five defense all time? with the performance that they had. Think about it. You shut down New England and Tom Brady. You shut down Cam Newton, a team that led the league in scoring this year. The defenses that I throw up there, just names that are out there. The 76 Steel Curtain defense with Pittsburgh, unbelievable. Obviously, the 85 Bears were revolutionary the way they blitzed. You could put the 86 Giants in there because Lawrence Taylor and that crew was phenomenal. The 2000 Baltimore Ravens
defense,
2 years ago, Seattle's defense that beat basically the same Broncos team 43-8.
Yeah.
And then
the Purple People Eaters.
The Purple People Eaters, you could throw the Grits Blitz in there. The no-name Dolphins defense. I mean, does this defense rank with all of them?
I think you got to put them up there with all that. It's so hard to compare different eras because the game is so different now than it used to be. But my whole thing is you look at the performance on the biggest stage, and that unit could not have played any better than they did. And that's really what you look for in those big defenses.
When I look at the Broncos defense, and you just named what they did in the playoffs, I look at the caliber of players they went into as far as the quarterback position. And you saw what they did to Brady. And then you turn around and you play, all right, I don't know if they can do that versus a mobile guy like Cam, and they do the exact same thing. That puts them in, I think, a elite group, like you just mentioned. I don't know if they're top five, but I think they're right on the edge of that because of the way they played in this postseason throughout the year, all year long. This is a defense. I know, John, you're going to bring up Von Miller here in a minute, but we can't forget about what he did in this ball game. And just a small takeaway for me is I don't understand why you don't get help with Von Miller.
Because DeMarcus Ware.
I know you got DeMarcus Ware on the other side, but still, you got to chip him. You got to come down and crack him. There was none of that stuff done to him to kind of slow him down at all. And that's just a small takeaway. I know Von Miller, and like you mentioned, they got so many guys up front, but you got to find ways to slow him down when he's been the guy throughout the game who is really, really giving you fits.
I would say, in fairness, Shock, there's a video out of him on one of the sacks. He starts on the offense's right side. They set a running back to come chip him with the offensive lineman. He engages the running back, spins back inside where he loses both of them, and then tracks down Cam Newton.
Yeah.
You try what you want, the guy's a special player.
That's the thing. And you know, I read a great column. I think it was from SI. I can't remember where it was from. But it was that the Super Bowl was basically decided on the matchup between Von Miller and Mike Reimers. Mm-hmm. And it's so true. I think Mike is still looking for Von over his shoulder. Like, there were times when he didn't even see him. And Von is just a special, special player. And you know, everybody wants that type of linebacker on their team. But to have the DNA to have, you know, just all the parts come together for you know, that prototypical type of athlete is so rare. And that's why they're so fun to watch. And especially, I mean, when you talk about the biggest stage, this is where legends are made. Make no mistake. I mean, you talk about, you know, some of the greatest that have ever played, and chances are they had fantastic Super Bowl performances. So, you know, Von Miller's a guy we're going to be talking about for a long time. We're going to be talking about him all offseason because he's set to become a free agent and is going to be
he's going to walk in and say whatever.
There's this much chance he's out of Denver.
Yeah. He's not going anywhere. Don't start tweeting us, bring him home. He's not going anywhere. If anything, they tag him.
Of course.
You know, he's going to stay in Denver. But, you know, Von Miller is the kind of guy, I think, if you're a defensive coach and you're going in to scout prospects, you're looking for guys who have the tangibles that he
has. One thing about Von Miller that I think gets lost in how well he rushes the passer is a lot of good pass rushers, they do a good job of having different moves. They can get around. They can get to the quarterback. They can spin and all that. But the one thing that separates him is every time that he gets to the quarterback, he wants the football. Every single time he wants the football, and he's going to get the sack as well, but he wants that football. That's what the next level pass rushers can do. They have the ability to beat the guy in front of them, but also when they get there, they're going to make their presence known. They're going after the football. They're stripping it. He did that two or three times throughout the game. Whenever he's around the quarterback, he is trying to get the football.
And then, you know, I think it also says something when you've got another guy on that other side.
Oh, yeah.
Who's just as dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
DeMarcus Ware was all over the place.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, you talked about a couple of years ago, well, he's only got a year or two left maybe. Well, I mean, this might be the final game for him too, but, I mean, he could bring it, and he brought it against Carolina that night. I think you know, you look at these defenses and you know, you talk about Carolina's and how they built from the inside out, you know. And it seems like the Broncos' defensive tackles are maybe the unsung heroes here a bit, because nobody's talking about them. I mean, but Derek Wolfe was phenomenal. But they those guys in the middle really kind of did a lot, did their jobs, allowed everybody else to kind of do their jobs, eating up those double teams, all that kind of stuff. It's really the big key to building a good, solid defense is those two guys in the middle, it seems. A
couple of key stories that come out of the Super Bowl that we'll touch on briefly. I don't want to turn this into the Cam Newton show here on FalconCast, but we will talk about some of the stuff that transpired afterwards. First and foremost, just quick straw poll. Peyton Manning back next year anywhere?
No.
No. Zero chance.
No.
I agree. I don't think there's any way that he comes back.
For what? There's
exactly.
No reason.
I know the Rams allegedly have made some overtures towards Peyton Manning.
No.
There's no reason for him to come back.
None.
Suddenly he turns into, what is it, Johnny Unitas playing for the Chargers or something like that? Or
yeah, right. Yeah, it's weird.
O.J. Simpson with the Niners.
Before we move on, I do want to bring up one point that's close to DJ's heart, and that is the fact that Thomas Davis played in that game with a gangly-looking arm.
Yeah.
And played as hard as he did all year. You got to give credit to this guy. I tweeted out, I mean, that's like Ronnie Lott type of toughness. You've got like screws and plates and however many staples in your arm, and you're going out there and you're playing a football.
And it was all over the place, too. I mean, he looked the same running around.
He looked exactly the same.
Had the same, you know, throwing his body around, and, you know, I actually talked to him, and he was like, yeah, I was in some pain, but it's the Super Bowl, man. Yeah. Come on. I mean, he was like, I've been waiting on this 11 years, and now I get the chance to play in the Super Bowl. There's no way I'm not playing it. Regardless of how I looked and felt, I'm out there.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I saw the pictures afterwards. It literally looked like the stitch. If you guys have missed it, it looked like the stitching of a football was up the side of his arm. Yeah. That's what it looked like. Yeah. I mean, it was pretty disgusting, but the guy went out and played his butt off. Amazing. What happened? You know, what happened after the Super Bowl has been the talk in sports talk and ESPN and everywhere else with Cam Newton and how he acted at the end of the game. Now, in fairness to Cam, walked over to Peyton Manning, congratulated him on the field, which is what I think where the sportsmanship, a lot of people are saying he didn't have sportsmanship. That's nonsense. He walked over and congratulated the winning quarterback like you're supposed to do, hugged him, had a smile on his face, walked back to the locker room. Where people are upset is what happened in the post-game press conference afterwards, where Cam Newton had the hood on, very short with his answers, and what, about 3 minutes in, got up and walked out.
Yeah. That's it's a shame that storyline has kind of overshadowed everything else that he accomplished in the year, because he did have a phenomenal year. I think these are the kinds of situations where, you know, you got to remember he's still a young quarterback. He's still trying to learn, trying to mature through this process. One of those things is you have to have the same grace when you lose as you do when you win. And if you're going to go out and you're going to kind of, you know, hoot it up and really kind of celebrate the big wins, you've got to be able to take the lumps too. You got to take the punches, which, you know, sometimes comes with facing tough questions with the media, and you know, those are people who are ultimately deciding what the tenor of your actions is going to be out in the public sphere. And so I don't think you ever hurt yourself by being kind and answering questions, you know, afterwards. Look, the loss hurts. I get it. I absolutely understand that. And it's agonizing. But sometimes you just got to, for the betterment of yourself, for your team, you just got to answer the questions and just get it over with.
Shock, as a player that's played in this league, Jay or I have been on the other side. We're members of the media. We go in there and we ask questions. Are you guys told or prepped or anything before you get ready to face a media session? When you know, as a losing quarterback, and I can go back to your days at Georgia as a starter, when you lost the game, did Coach Rick or anybody come to you and say, hey, here's how you need to handle this?
You know what? There were times, I think I remember going through a time like the way Cam has gone through, not in a Super Bowl or something like that of that magnitude, but still after a big loss. And the coaches in our meeting right before, you know, you meet at the end of the game, and he said, all right, guys, you know, you got to talk to the media, so make sure you give the other team credit. You know, let's do this with class, and, you know, let's make sure, you know, you're representing your team in a positive light. So it's not an individual thing, but every coach I've been around or I've had after a game, after a tough loss, they say, all right, guys, you know you got to talk to the media. If you're frustrated, let's keep this in-house, but let's give them all the credit. Let's, you know, like you mentioned, you got to be kind in what you do. And I think this was a situation where, like you mentioned, Cam's mad. He's angry. He's frustrated. He should be. He just lost the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And you can understand it. And I think the media came in knowing that, yeah, he should be frustrated. He's going to be a little angry. But I think there was a better way for Cam to handle it as far as answering more questions. Or, you know, I know he talked about, you know, just because I didn't answer him the way you wanted to answer doesn't make it right and all that kind of stuff. But I think the fact that the way he portrays himself when they're winning, I think the way that, you know, the team has been so outlandish and flamboyant as far as when they win and they can talk and they can do all that kind of stuff, I think people expect the same kind of – now, not same kind of attitude, but they want you to be able to behave in that same manner when you lose and kind of lose gracefully. And I think a lot of people were a little upset because he walked out of it, because he didn't, you know, fully give the answers that everybody else wanted to hear. But I think it's going to be a learning experience for him. He'll learn from it. He'll move on. But it's still, I think he should have handled it just a little bit better.
Yeah, I think he can look at some other quarterbacks around the league and see how they handle the same situations. And, you know, look, on one side, it does show how much he cares. Mm-hmm. And it shows how much it meant to him to be in the Super Bowl and to have a chance to win it, and how devastating that can be to go in and thinking you're going to win it and then not come out on top, you know. But, you know, to DJ's point, you just got to put on the face for 10 minutes, just answer some questions, and get out of there. You know, it's like, to bring it back to the Falcons, since this is the Falcon cast, you know, you look at Matt Ryan is the same after, you know, the Philadelphia win in overtime, which was exciting and everything.
Well, they were going through the 5-6 game losing streak.
Yeah, he was the same exact tenor during that as it, what he was in the losing streak. And so that's kind of how you have to be. You look at Russell Wilson last year in the Super Bowl, he throws that pick that ends the game. And, you know, he was extremely graceful in kind of how he handled that that situation afterwards with the media. So I think there's some things that Cam can certainly learn.
I think the point you just bring up about other guys who played in the Super Bowl and have lost, I think that kind of resonates more to people as far as how big of a game it is, mm-hmm. and how it can impact other guys. And you can say, well, Matt hasn't been through a Super Bowl loss. Sure. Well, okay, here's other guys who've done it. You know, like you just mentioned, Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, all those guys have lost a Super Bowl and still be able to handle it gracefully. I know Cam early in the week said, you know, if you see a great loser, I'll show you, you know, a loser. Mm-hmm. Well, other guys have been losers and really done it gracefully. So I think there are ways to handle it, especially on that biggest stage.
And I get it. It's got to be so hard to sit up there and to think about something that hurts so much and right. to be asked questions about it. And especially if you're an emotional guy. And we know Cam's an emotional guy. He lives off of his emotions, like on the field, off the field, all that. So I get it. There's a part of me that gets it. You just want to get yourself out of the situation. And maybe it was a situation where he knows he's going to say something he's going to regret, so I'm just going to take myself out of the situation. Looking at the transcript of the questions that were asked, there was absolutely nothing that was asked that was unfair.
No.
So I think it's – he just needs to kind of take it again as a learning experience and, you know, kind of –
John, how about you? What do you think?
I'm not as mad as him as a lot of the national media is or a lot of the local media is. I understand the emotions of the game, and I'll take it back to Cam Newton, the person, being in the locker room with them after they lost a game right here in Atlanta. They lost to the Falcons 2012, the year the Falcons go 13-3, on a game where all they needed was 4th-and-1 to convert. They would have, you know, stopped the winning streak, and Cam Newton fumbled at like the 50-yard line, whatever it was, Falcons go down and win. And Cam Newton spent close to an hour that day sitting in his locker room with a towel over his head, not looking at anybody, not talking to anybody. The media is all standing outside by the podium waiting for him, and he took his time. He also was the same guy this year when their winning streak came to an end here in Atlanta. He wasn't all bubbly and happy. So what I look at that and what I take from it is this is just part of what Cam Newton is. You have to take the good with the bad, and I'm not going to kill a guy on Super Bowl Sunday when you lose the biggest game of your life for not sitting there and handling it like we want everybody to handle it. Because if all of us were the same, Shaq would handle it one way, Jay, you'd handle it one way, I'm going to handle it different.
Absolutely.
And that's, absolutely, I think, why you have to look at it with Cam Newton. I think where people have been rubbed the wrong way with him is the fact that they did the selfie on the field while the game's still going on, the fact that you're dabbing every 30 seconds. you know, they take the bad and they, you know, they take the showboating. They say, well, if you showboat, you better be able to lose the same way. Sometimes what goes along with that is emotion, as Jay talked about, and the emotion can be great on one side and it can be awful on the other.
Yeah.
I'll use LeBron as an example. Miami loses the 2010 NBA Finals. That was the year LeBron had the decision and was the villain all year. And the press conference, he was kind of surly afterwards. He wasn't your typical professional LeBron. And I think after that, he went home for the summer, kind of looked in the mirror and said, wait a second, I'm not a villain. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't play the villain role. I need to be a face. I need to be the face of the NBA. I need to go back to being happy LeBron. And they came back the next year after the strike, and LeBron was a different person. And they went back to playing fun and all of that, and they end up winning an NBA championship. I think Cam's going to go home this offseason. He's going to look in the mirror. He's probably going to rewatch some of that. He's going to talk to his family, and you know he's got a good family around him. He's going to talk to his teammates, who obviously support the heck out of him. And I think you see Cam Newton come back even better next year than he was this year as far as a person goes.
Yeah, look, Happy Cam is an endearing Cam, right? Mm-hmm. So you've seen him when he's on the field. You either love him or hate him. I mean, if you're a Falcons fan, you're not going to want to see him celebrate or whatever. If you kind of take yourself out of that situation, he's having fun, and you know he's out there. I personally never saw anything other than taking the picture during a game where, you know, they had crossed the line on right. any of their celebrating and things like that. Happy Cam is extremely marketable, mm-hmm. right? So
Angry Cam is not.
Angry Cam is not. And so I think that's a situation where you're going to mess with your money a little bit too, because you're going to have those endorsement deals out there. You got to be able to come out, and you're not a Richard Sherman, right? You people kind of want you to be this
bubbly happy
guy, yeah, which you I are.
I think on the other
things are going great.
Like you mentioned, on the other side of it, him being as popular, he's going to be ideally one of the faces of the National Football League, if not the face of the National Football League.
He already is.
Yeah, and that's the thing about it is, I think, like you mentioned, the personality of Cam is going to bring endorsements, you know, throughout the wazoo, and people want to see it. And I think people will forget about this. People will move on.
Absolutely.
It's just a story for now. But I think Peyton came out and said something about Cam was graceful and humble when they went out and spoke after the game. So I think he understands how big Cam is going to be. And you need guys like that as the face of the National Football League, because you got so many impressionable little kids around the world that are watching, that want to be Cam, that want to be or do the things that he does. So I think that makes a huge difference.
What do you say, though, to people who think that sports – personalities don't have that responsibility on them?
They definitely do.
See, I agree with you. I don't like that. I mean,
whether you want it or not, you have to be. It goes back to when Charles Barkley said, "I'm not a role model." I mean, regardless of whether he wants to or not,
like it doesn't matter.
You're thrown into that position. It's like as a quarterback, you're thrown into being a leader of a team. It's just part of what you got to deal with.
Who do kids typically want to emulate? Their parents, mm-hmm. first and foremost, especially at the young age, up to about 7 or 8. When they get around their friends, you know who they want to emulate?
Michael Jordan.
Well, Ninja Turtles. They want to emulate Michael Jordan. They want to emulate Justin Bieber. Yeah. The people that are on TV, those end up being the people that you talk about. Let's turn it to the Falcons, though.
Falcon Cast.
Yeah, Falcon Cast. We'll get back to actual Falcon news. Some stuff going on. To tie to the Super Bowl, first of all, Von Miller. And I meant to get to this when we were talking about Von Miller. But he had a quote that said, Falcons defensive coordinator Richard Smith developed him into the player that he is today.
Wow.
Does that lead you to believe that Vic Beasley, a guy that you hope one day can be pretty close to Von Miller, is with the right guy?
I'm staking claim in it. Yep. Gotta be. Well, you know what? It's all about the person, too. Mm-hmm. You have to want it. And I think Vic shows signs at the end of the year where he can be that type of pass rusher. You think about how this game was pretty much ended in the Super Bowl. Vic kind of ended Carolina game the same way by knocking the ball out, strip sack, coming from that right side like Von Miller did. So you got to think Richard Smith's going to have a lot of input on how well of a player that Vic Beasley turns into.
That was one of the big things that stood out to me when we first hired Richard Smith, was his past with Von Miller and just how much Von credits Richard Smith with developing him in his mm-hmm. first few years. To have that level of success and performance tied to your name as a coach, I think has to be a huge compliment for Richard Smith.
Yeah.
But it also really bodes well for everybody who's currently on the Falcons roster. And yeah, he was a position coach in Denver, and he's not a position coach here. But he has his hands on every single position around. And, you know, so I think Vic's in really, really good hands, mm-hmm. as are some of these other guys
yeah.
that I think are going to start to come around and start to break through. So, you know, you got to give these things a little bit of time. Mm-hmm. The thing about Vic is you try to put Vic and Von Miller on a scale, and it's not going to equal out. But you've got to look at the potential of Vic, and then mm-hmm. the potential is absolutely there. And I what drives me nuts is the people who are hating on him already and calling him a bust and all this other stuff, because it's just absolutely ridiculous. You got to look at his last four games mm-hmm. to really see kind of the growth
right. mm-hmm.
that he experienced during his first year. We have a story that will be hitting AtlantaFalcons.com shortly after this podcast, actually. And it's Andrew Hirsch, our AtlantaFalcons.com writer, spoke to Patrick Kearney mm-hmm. about Vic Beasley. And so we reached out to Patrick Kearney because we just wanted to get his take on Vic's rookie year. And he says, you know, I haven't really had a chance to see much. You know, he's a busy guy. He's right. doing things with the league and all that. So he's like, you know, do you have any tape you can send me? And so we sent him some tape. And Patrick actually sat down and studied Vic Beasley from week 1 to week 17. And we got his assessment on that. And nice. So that story is coming out. And I will Jeez. Tell you, we'll talk about this story next Big week. Kearney. I guarantee you we'll talk about this story on the podcast next week. But Patrick Kearney, I can tell you, came away extremely impressed mm-hmm. with what he saw out of Vic Beasley, especially in those last four games.
And if I'm Vic, I put on the Super Bowl. And I look at the moves of Von Miller. I know you can't emulate him 100%, but we talk about kids learning from their peers. How about football player learning from another football player? No, you put that on and learn the spin moves and the counters and everything else, and that's the right guy to watch. Falcons also made some moves roster-wise this week, releasing a couple of veterans, one of them who's been here since his rookie year in William Moore, the other one who was just signed a year ago in Justin Durant. I am surprised. I'll start with this, with one of the moves. I think we saw the writing on the wall with William Moore, the fact that he wasn't active at the end of the year. He's been injured, unfortunately, for a long time. I am shocked with Justin Durant, but I'll start with Willie Moe, getting to know him through the years that he's been here. And I tweeted this the other day on my Twitter account. I cannot say enough about how classy and how nice of a person William Moore was off the field. Yeah. He was a guy that went 5,000 miles per hour on the field, probably to his own detriment because he hurt himself a lot trying to make big plays. But Willie Moe, if you ever got a chance to talk to him, you never would have known he was a National Football League player outside of the palm tree in his house.
Yeah, that'll definitely give it away. Yeah, I feel the same. I mean, I've been around this guy for 5 years now. And it's always the hard part of working in the NFL is seeing these guys go. And, you know, William was one of those special guys that you loved having in the locker room, good leader, all that. And you just – my heart went out to him every time he would be down on the field. And you just knew that something wasn't right with him. You know, the thing about William Moore, and he got a lot of criticism for always being injured, but he got injured a lot because of the way he played. He – put his body on the line every single play for the Falcons. And so I hope people really remember that, you know, when they think about his time here. He's going to hook on with another team, and I have no doubt he's still going to be successful in the NFL. I hope he stays completely healthy and he continues his career, because he's such a great guy and he deserves it.
I mean, you guys are spot on. You hit everything that I would say, and when you're thinking about Willie Moe, but from a player standpoint, I think the best thing you like about him is the way he played, mm-hmm. the way he gave everything he had. And you knew if you were on the field with Willie Moe, you better be careful, because he's going to hit you or hit anybody who has the football. And you like guys who can play in that kind of manner. You know they're going to give everything they got. They're not going to hold anything back. And that's the one thing as a player you always wanted is, I want to make sure the guy next to me is always giving 100% when I'm giving 100%. Mm-hmm. And that's what you like when you get Willie Moe. And he's, like you mentioned, one of the coolest guys that you want to hang with. You always see him. He always has a couple guys around him. He's just that infectious type of personality, that guy that you want on your team mm-hmm. on and off the field. So it's tough that he's gone because of the things he went through. But you guess what? At the end of the day, I'm sure he's going to say, I gave everything I had when I played for this football team. And the reason I got hurt is because, you know, I put my body on the line week in and week out.
Quick story about William Moore. I was leaving Georgia Tech. I guess last year during a basketball game. It's the off season of the NFL, and I'm walking. I don't know if you guys are familiar with McCamus. You got to kind of park a couple of blocks down the road. So me and my son are walking down the street, and I get to one of the lights, and I just hear somebody beeping the horn. I look over. He's like, "What's up, man?" He said, "That's your little dude." So I walk over, say hi to William Moore, and he's got, you know, some of his people with me. And he was like, "Oh, it's one of the guys that does radio with us." So it's really cool. That's something that, you know, I'll always remember a player like that. He don't have to speak to me. You know, I'm not trying to be his friend. I'm not trying. But that's the kind
of
guy he was.
That's the type of guy. He you were his friend. Like, that's the way he treated everybody. And, you know, I know we're talking about him like he's dead, but he's just moving on to another team. And I just – my only hope is that he's on a team that we play so we can say hi to him again.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? The thing that I guess people sometimes fail to realize is these guys are human as well. Mm-hmm. And as a player and now as a guy who's just around the team, sometimes you're around guys who are not good guys. Right. You're around guys who won't speak to you. They keep walking or just
– But that's just like anybody would do in their regular job. Right. You're around people that are bad people.
Right. So I think the best thing about it is when you come across guys like this – it's a newfound respect for him, and you hate to see him go like you mentioned.
One of the things that I judge by is because I'm around these guys all the time. All the time I see them. I go, coming in, I'm going to make copies. I'm going in the break room there at the ATM. I see them all the time, right? Some guys know that I'm on staff. I'm, you know, all that. Talk to me. Some guy, you know, a lot of guys know me by name or good friends or whatever. There are some guys that just won't even look at you.
Oh.
And – so that's how I always judge these guys. It's like, will he say hello to a lowly staff member like myself? And, you know, fortunately we have more guys that do than don't. Mm-hmm. But it's just William Moore was always one of those guys who would, when he would see you, go the extra mile and just kind of make you feel like you're his best friend. And he was great.
A guy I didn't get to know very well was Justin Durant, only here for a year. But talk about intense on the field. He was a dude that was trying to hurt somebody in a good way, in a legal way. I was shocked by this move. I thought he was, even though he was injured this year, I thought he was the type of linebacker you're looking for to play in this system.
Yeah, he was good. And I think, again, I think these two guys are in the same boat when it comes to injuries. Just a guy that couldn't really stay healthy. Mm-hmm. That was the knock on him when we signed him. But, gosh, he put together a pretty good resume here in Atlanta when he was on the field. I think that, you know, the big question is, as well, what does this mean for the future? I mean, it could mean just clearing some cap space, right? I don't know. I think the coaching staff is really looking at this linebacking core and saying, okay, we've got to get better. As good as Justin Durant was, we've got to get better at these positions. And I think that might be part of it.
That's the avenue that I go down. I'm not into the big numbers and stuff. I know that stuff matters. But I look at it as far as personnel-wise. I think when you look at what they want to do defensively, they want to be faster. They want to be a little bit younger. I think this year you saw when they brought in my man Wheeler. My man Wheeler came in and he was all around the field flying around. Guys like Stupar coming in can play all different type of positions, all three linebackers, and flow and run. I think that's where they're going. They want to be that type of group. I know Durant's been around for 7 years, and, you know, he's a – you know, a great linebacker, but I think they want to get younger. They want to get faster. They want to be more athletic at their position. Just going back to the Super Bowl, look at the young athletic guys that can run at linebacker, that can go east and west. And, you know, being healthy, that's just part of the game. Guys are going to get hurt, so I don't hold that against anybody. But I think personnel-wise, they want to get younger. They want to get athletic. They want to be faster. And I think that's where they're going right now.
And I think if you look at the crop of outside linebackers that are going to hopefully be available in free agency, there's some really good names there.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that you're in a good cap situation where you're going to be able to go out and you're going to be able to spend a little bit of money this year. So it wouldn't surprise me to see that position be taken care of in free agency. You go back to the safety spot, and you're like, well, who's going to replace William Moore? I think everybody's looking at draft and all that other stuff. For me, right now, as of today, I think it's Kamal Ishmael's spot to lose.
Yeah.
I really do. Kamal played really, really well this year. He's really come along, a seventh-round pick, and you talk about the value that you get out of a seventh-round pick who can come in and have an impact on your team. Plays exactly the same way as William Moore, just not as injured.
Kamal's really good in coverage, too.
Really good in coverage.
Covers really well, too.
So he will hit you just as hard as William Moore will. I expect there to be some safety depth added somewhere.
Sure, of course.
You know, whether it's in free agency, whether it's through the draft, I expect that. But I think if camp were to start today, knowing what I know, I would say that it would be Kamal's spot to lose.
And the Falcons make one other move this week. They hire Joel Collier, director of pro personnel. I'm not going to pretend to know a ton about him. Comes from the Kansas City tree. Was under Scott Pioli before.
Yeah.
Just another eye and another ear and another guy that's got some veteran, you know, value to come in here and try to help get this right, get the right type of players in here. And if you look at what Kansas City's built, say what you want, they built a defense that I think every one of us here would love to have.
Sure, and this is a guy who's going to be solely focused on the players that are currently in the league. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not worried about college or any, you know, prospects, anything like that. This is a guy who is looking at free agents, looking at the tape, you know, deciding who fits this system, who fits with what we're doing here. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. He's got a football pedigree. His father was a head coach mm-hmm. for the Buffalo Bills at one point. So he's kind of grown up around the sport, and it'll be interesting to see what he brings to the table.
I know the fans are asking a lot of questions now about all these different guys you're bringing in from the personnel standpoint. And I look at it as a positive that mm-hmm. – this
I'm
organization,
actually surprised it's being looked at as a negative. I am surprised it's being looked at as a negative.
I look at it as this is an organization that understands that we have to be better when drafting. We've got to be better with the guys we're bringing in because we've, you know, say you've missed out on a few guys here and there in the personnel department. So I think that they're now in a position where we're bringing in whatever we need to, guys from all different aspects of this league, and saying we're going to get it right. We're going to bring all these guys in and be collectively to get this thing together and get it right. So I think it's a positive that they bring guys in that knows the pro game, that knows the pro guys. They got guys coming in that knows the college part of it, and they're all going to come together and put their heads together and try to put the best 53-man roster on this field for the Falcons. I think that's a step in the right direction.
You know, a lot of the detractors have said, well, you've got too many cooks in the kitchen now.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, if you've got six GMs or whatever in a room, you've got too many cooks in the kitchen if they're all GMs.
Right.
They're not, okay? It's very clear who's calling the shots in the room, and these guys are just going to have their input. There's not going to be infighting and, you know, mutinies and all this other stuff. So I don't know what people are imagining out
and
there.
And here's one last thing I'll mention is Arthur Blank, you know, what was on the radio earlier in the week talking about Roddy White. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'm going to take the emotional part out of it. And at the end of the day, this is going to be Dan Quinn's decision. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's what you like to hear is the coach who's in there with him in the trenches, and he's going to be able to make a decision on these key players, not just Roddy, but a lot of different, you know, players on his team. And like you said, with a lot of cooks in there, at the end of the day, Coach Quinn has to put this team together the way he sees fit that fits his system, and that's what matters.
You have experienced eyes in that room. Mm-hmm. That's the way to look at this. You have experienced eyes who know how to scout.
I don't have a problem with that. No, nobody says that when a former head coach is hired as a defensive coordinator right. or an offensive coordinator. Oh, he's going to try to – no, he's not trying to take the job. He's trying to win. Yeah. That's right. What these guys are – there's people in these offices around here that are paid a lot of money mm-hmm. to win football games. They're paid a lot of money to next year be playing where Carolina was playing this year. And that's where they're all trying to get to. So, with that, Mr. Bosak, it's almost time for a 5-4-3 over there.
Yeah, yeah, we're getting close, aren't we?
Close.
Bosak, you got a little hangover action right there. It's hanging over on that, man. Buzz it out, man.
Yeah, I'll get it. Super Bowl.
Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Super Bowl. Aside from the action, this next best thing is a time in between the action, which is the commercials.
The money.
Okay, so the commercials, I mean, everybody talks about the commercials every year. The last couple of years, I've been a little disappointed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think not the expectations are so high, man.
Because they used to be so good.
Yeah.
Right.
They used to be so good, and now they're just not good. Okay, so there were not two commercials. Not so if I was – I was thinking about this. If I was somebody in another country mm-hmm. who knew nothing of America
right.
and watched the commercials from the Super Bowl, that's all I could watch – I would assume that we eat nothing but garbage, and we all have trouble going to the bathroom.
and
that would be pretty accurate.
And we all have expensive cars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be the other thing. That is the tone that I saw throughout the Super Bowl commercials.
Well, Bosek's question was, what's your favorite Super Bowl commercial? It's funny. Yep. Mine was the Acura NSX, because I saw that, and I go, ooh, I want one of those. And then I thought, I said, wow, yeah, I got a girlfriend, and she's got a kid. kid. We ain't fitting in that car. Mm-hmm. And then I started thinking, you know, if they're coming out with this thing and this is a Super Bowl commercial, it's probably a $100,000 plus car. And there's only one of the three of us at this table that even look in that range. And I'm not going to name any names. I'm just going to point.
Not
Matt Ryan. Pointing
right here at Matt Ryan.
Right here, yeah. He also played the same position, but not. That was my favorite commercial, though, because I saw that and I said, other than that, I thought the commercial stunk this year.
Yeah.
Flat out
yeah.
stunk.
I had a couple of them. I liked the Kevin Hart commercial with the, I forget what it was, the Kia. I know what car it was. And the GPS locator and, you know, following his daughter around. I was like, that could be me right there. My daughter gets older. I'm not playing around. So I could relate to that one. And then one I thought that was funny that my kids got a little kick out of was the little weenie dogs, and they were running down the hill, and they were running towards the ketchup and mustard. It's a Heinz commercial. I thought it was kind of funny. So, you know, other than that, like you mentioned, there were not many that the next day I could be like, oh, yeah, I remember that commercial.
You want to know which one was my favorite?
Which one?
Puppy Monkey Baby.
Puppy Monkey Baby.
Is that our video of the week?
Monkey Baby. That's the video of the week. And then I had two favorites, too, which were two of the Dorito commercials, which I also selected in all show. All
right, let's see.
I remember that one with him, the baby.
Yeah. I'll show Jay's.
You see that one?
Baby. What?
Jay's favorite.
The Dorito baby one was
awesome. Oh, yeah. I saw
Dorito,
that. I didn't care.
You didn't like that?
I love Puppy Monkey Baby.
I might just chill tonight.
There we go. Look at that thing. Puppy
Monkey Baby. Puppy Monkey
Baby. I want one.
Puppy Monkey Baby.
I would not have noticed this was a Mountain Dew commercial until just now.
Puppy Monkey.
What is happening?
So, for those of you that are listening and wondering what the heck we're listening to, it's the Mountain Dew commercial from the Super Bowl, Puppy Monkey Baby. There's, I think that's a Boston Terrier face with a monkey body and baby legs.
I think it's a pug, actually.
Might be a pug. You're probably
right. It's a pug. Puppy Monkey Baby is my favorite thing ever.
Why do you like that so much?
I don't know. He's just delightfully creepy. I just feel like if I had a Puppy Monkey Baby, I would probably, my afternoons would be less boring.
Just think about this. You're a marketing guy, and that's what you came up with.
Right, right. You thought
and you're
about
probably getting paid.
And you know what?
Hundreds of thousands.
2 days later, people are still talking about Puppy Monkey Baby. Yeah.
So you won.
Are me.
And that was a Kickstarter, too.
Yeah.
Energy drink, huh?
Caffeine.
Puppy Monkey. What's the next one?
Next one?
It's a Doritos commercial.
Yeah.
I remember this commercial.
This one was pretty awesome.
This was funny. He was like, oh!
I was like, all right, enough of this.
Oh, you get a cute.
All right, Bosek.
All right.
Come on.
All right, Bosek.
All right, Bosek. Video problems. All right, here we go. Home. Here we go. Little Doritos action.
And play.
Oh, no, I didn't see this.
I didn't see this one either.
I didn't see that. Yes, you
and
did.
And there's your picture, baby.
Yes, I did.
Any day now.
You're just sitting there eating Doritos?
You're eating Doritos?
He's so unbothered right now.
Doc, were you like that when you were in the ultrasound?
I have to deal. I know.
Nah, I was into it, man. I was into it.
I did the typical guy thing.
That baby can't see in there.
So you guys can't see it right now. We're on iTunes. It's the Dorito commercial with the ultrasound. The child actually acts like he sees the dad Dorito. Moving the chip. And every time he moves the chip a certain way, the kid moves. And then he throws the chip.
The mom throws the chip,
and he goes for it.
Kid comes out, hopefully not premature. This is pretty awesome.
Oh, man, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. All right, this is the other one I like.
I don't know if I saw this one.
It's a dog one.
Okay.
So this was created by a couple of people in California.
All right.
I don't remember this.
Basically, what's happening, the dogs are trying to get the Doritos in the grocery store. There's a sign that says no dogs allowed. So the dogs are doing whatever they can to sneak in. They tried going under the cart. They tried going to a couple of different places. Now they're in dog disguise. With the trench coat, the hat. The manager's looking at
them. That was funny. My favorite one.
That was pretty good. And all those were pretty good. Those are all pretty funny. It was not as great a crop as they've had in years past. So we'll move on to Picks the Click, as it came down to Jay and Shock to win the playoff edition of Picks the Click. Jay had Carolina, and if you can tell by the video, the man standing up taking a bow. He had the Denver Broncos. He wins four playoff games, so three of them with Denver. Who was your other? Who was your NFC team?
Arizona.
Okay, so you had some front runners, but either way, you end up with four. Jay ends up in second with three. Me and Bosek bring up the rear like we pretty
regular
much did.
Season, postseason,
pretty much did the entire year. Thank you. DJ wins, and we've got to figure out. We got to give him something.
We'll figure it out.
Nothing crazy.
Next week, next Falcon Cast, we are starting the Falcon Cast mock draft. As if the draft was today, who would we take in the first round? Each of us will give our pick.
Okay.
Got it. Like Ooh. It.
Awesome. We'll do like that. And we'll also get a full recap of DJ's extravaganza in Vegas next week.
Yours as well. Yeah. Yours as well.
Awesome is that, we'll be out there together.
Guess who's not going to Vegas this weekend?
We're
going to
be in Vegas.
We'll be in Vegas.
Wish us luck.
Yeah. Hopefully I come back with more money than I leave with.
I need you both.
That's always a win.
Boom!